Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Imagine a child just too small for their age, the growth stunted, their whole future potentially compromised. It's a tough picture, isn't it? And did you know that globally this isn't rare? Over 149 million children under 5 suffer from stunting. That means they're too short for their age. And another 45 million are wasted, too thin for their height. Now, this isn't simply about not having enough food on the table. It's actually a really complex kind of silent crisis. It's particularly devastating in places like sub-Saharan Africa. You see, undernutrition like this can cause irreversible damage. We're talking about brain development, how well a child does in school, even their economic prospects later in life. And often, it seems to be deeply connected to things like chronic gut inflammation and maybe an imbalance in the trillions of tiny microbes living inside us. For decades, researchers have been trying hard to understand the root causes, you know. But many of the traditional methods, well, they just haven't been able to give us that full, intricate picture of what's really happening inside a child's gut.
But what if we could zoom right in? I mean, with incredible detail, mapping the entire genetic makeup of every single microbe in there. And then what if we could actually track how tiny genetic changes in those microbes correlate directly with how a child grows over time? How might that kind of insight completely change our approach to this global health emergency?
Well, today we're diving deep into a truly groundbreaking new resource. It really promises to shift how we understand childhood undernutrition, and it's a result of an incredible collaborative effort.
Indeed it is. This was a multi-institutional project, and it's really advanced our understanding of that complex dance between the gut microbiome and pediatric undernutrition. The work was led by a really dedicated team, including folks like Jeremiah Minish and Todd Michael, and it involved crucial contributions from top institutions like the Salk Institute, UC San Diego, Washington University in St. Louis, and really importantly, Kamuzu University of Health Sciences in Malawi. Their combined work truly lights a path forward.
Okay, so it sounds like we're looking at a fundamental biological puzzle here, not just, you know, external problem of food scarcity. What exactly is thought to be going on inside the gut that makes this challenge so incredibly persistent?
Well, the scale of pediatric undernutrition is just, it's immense. Stunting affects nearly 1 in 4 children globally. That's a staggering number. And as you mentioned, it's a profound health challenge, especially in regions like Malawi, where stunting rates can hit 37%. The consequences are really severe. Permanent cognitive and developmental damage, reduced academic achievement, and long-term economic disadvantage for individuals and communities. Now, a key hypothesis, and one that's gaining a lot of traction, is that a chronically inflamed, sort of dysfunctional gut plays a critical role. This inflammation is often driven by microbial imbalances, what we call dysbiosis, and it leads to this condition known as environmental enteric dysfunction, or
ED.
ED is essentially this persistent low-grade inflammation of the gut lining. You can imagine trying to absorb vital nutrients through a filter that's constantly irritated and damaged. It becomes incredibly inefficient, right? Even if there's enough food available.
Oh, okay. So the gut just can't do its job properly.
Exactly. And this ED has been consistently linked to impaired growth or linear growth faltering.
So, if the problem, this inflamed gut, this ED, is becoming clearer, why haven't we managed to crack it yet? What were researchers missing with the older techniques? Where did they fall short?
That's a great question. Most prior research tended to focus on static measurements, like looking at a single point in time, or they relied on technologies like 16S RNA gene sequencing. Now, 16S is useful, don't get me wrong, but
that's limited.
It's limited. It's kind of like looking at a forest and only being able to identify trees by their general shape, maybe oak versus pine, but not the specific species or subspecies or any unique genetic variations within them.
Okay, so a broad overview, but missing the crucial details.
Precisely. It gives you that broad community picture, but we realized we needed to go much, much deeper. We needed the complete microbial genomes, the entire instruction manual for each microbe, and crucially, we needed to track changes over time, longitudinally, not just these one-off snapshots. That's where metagenomics, studying all the genetic material, comes in.
Right, metagenomics. But even standard metagenomics, the kind using short read sequencing, that had its limits too, didn't it? What parts of the microbial puzzle was that still leaving out?
Yeah, that's the core issue they tackled. Short read sequencing, while definitely powerful, often gives you very fragmented, incomplete microbial genomes. It's like trying to read a book where lots of pages are torn into tiny pieces. You might get the gist, but you miss crucial sentences, maybe even whole chapters. So it makes it incredibly difficult to really understand the full genetic potential of these microbes. You can't easily see exactly which genes they have or pinpoint specific variations within those genes. And that ability to link specific genetic features to health outcomes, like growth, is absolutely vital. With short reads, you're often left with an incomplete story, missing those key connections.
Okay, so this sounds like a challenge crying out for a completely new approach then. Mm-hmm. How did this team imagine solving this? What level of detail were they aiming for with this long-read DNA sequencing?
Their mission, fundamentally, was to recover complete metagenome-assembled genomes. We call them CMAGs. Think of them as full, high-resolution genetic blueprints for individual microbes directly from the complex gut sample.
Complete blueprints.
Exactly. And the core of their deep dive lies in this powerful new approach. Culture-independent metapangenomics enabled by long-read metagenomics. Let's break that down a bit.
Please do.
Culture-independent means they could study all the genetic material from all the microbes in a sample without the very difficult step of trying to grow each one in a lab dish. Many gut microbes just won't grow that way.
Right.
Long-read metagenomics means using sequencing technologies that produce much longer DNA sequences. This makes it vastly easier to piece together those complete microbial genomes, like having bigger jigsaw puzzle pieces.
Oh, that makes sense.
And once they had these complete genomes, they could do metapangenomics. That means comparing the entire gene pool, the pangenome, across many related microbes, both within and between individuals, to see the full repertoire of genes available to a species and how they vary.
Wow. So it's like finally getting the full instruction manual for every organism in the community.
That's a great way to put it.
This sounds incredibly meticulous. Can you walk us through the actual study design? Who were the participants and how long do they follow them?
Sure. They started with a longitudinal Malawian pediatric cohort. Initially, they focused intensely on 8 children who were between 12 and 24 months old. Importantly, these initial 8 were carefully selected to be balanced across different growth trajectories, some growing well, some faltering, as well as sex, and they came from 2 different villages to capture some environmental variation.
Okay, that makes sense.
Each of these children provided 5 to 6 fecal samples over an 11-month period. That longitudinal aspect, tracking over time, was absolutely critical to see how things changed.
Almost a year of tracking.
Exactly. Then, to broaden the picture, they expanded their taxonomic and functional profiling using these methods to an additional 39 participants. So in total, they had data from 47 children, giving them a really robust data set to look for patterns and dynamics in the microbiome related to growth over that extended period.
That sounds like a massive technical undertaking, especially getting high-quality long reads from complex fecal samples. What sort of cutting-edge tools did they actually use to pull this off?
Oh, absolutely. It was a major technical hurdle. First, they had to develop and really optimize a high-throughput protocol specifically for extracting high molecular weight DNA from fecal samples. You need long, intact DNA strands for long-read sequencing.
Right, that's step one.
Then came the sequencing itself. They didn't just pick one platform. They extensively compared 3 cutting-edge technologies head-to-head. They used PacBio HiFi, which is known for its really high-accuracy long reads. They used Oxford Nanopore Technologies, or ONT, which offers real-time sequencing possibilities. And they also compared these to the more traditional Illumina short-read methods, including a synthetic long-read approach.
So a real bake-off of the latest tech.
Pretty much. And a critical step was generating what they called hybrid long-read data. They combined the best aspects of the PacBio reads with quality-filtered nanopore reads. This hybrid approach, combined with sophisticated assembly software, is what allowed them to recover that astounding number, 986 complete metagenome-assembled genomes, CMAGs.
986. That's incredible.
It really is. It set a new benchmark. And the study itself became this unique resource comparing the very latest iterations of the tech, like ONT's Kit 14 and PacBio's Revio, on a large real-world longitudinal data set.
Okay, so they have this mountain of incredible genomic data, these complete microbial blueprints. How on earth did they start to make sense of it all? What computational approaches did they use?
Yeah, that's where sophisticated bioinformatics comes in. With these complete genomes finally in hand, they could deploy some really powerful computational tools. They use machine learning algorithms to sift through the data and identify specific microbial species that seemed predictive of linear growth patterns in the children.
Okay, finding the key players.
Exactly. Then they performed two different types of pangenome analyses to understand the gene content. One method looked at tiny, unique genetic sequences called comers across the whole genome. Think of it like looking for shared or unique genetic fingerprints across different strains or species. The other approach was more functional. It focused on identifying the actual functions encoded by the genes, giving a picture of what these microbes could potentially do.
Ah, structure and function.
Precisely. And these detailed pangenome views enabled them to perform microbial genome-wide association studies, or MGUS. This is powerful because it allows you to pinpoint specific genes or even single genetic variations, alleles, that are statistically associated with a particular outcome, like good growth or poor growth.
So linking specific microbial genes to the child's health outcome.
Yes, and they didn't stop there. They also tracked measures of genome instability, how much the bacterial genomes were changing over time within each child. And they even looked at phage integration events, where viruses insert their DNA into the bacterial genomes. All of this together established a really new, much higher standard for how we can study microbiomes.
Wow. Okay, so with all this incredible technology and deep analysis, what did they actually find? Give us some of the main aha moments that came out of this work.
Well, probably the first most striking finding was just the sheer power and efficiency of the long-read sequencing approach itself. Their long-read methods, particularly the hybrid one, generated an absolutely astonishing 44 to 64 times more complete metagenome-assembled genomes per gigabase pair of sequence data compared to the standard short-read methods.
44 to 64 times more.
Yes. It's a huge difference.
That's not just an incremental improvement, that's a step change.
It absolutely is. What this means, practically, is you get a much, much clearer, more comprehensive view of the microbiome, a really high-definition picture, often using significantly less raw sequencing data. You see things you simply couldn't resolve before.
That efficiency gain is remarkable. Was there one particular technology within the long-reads that sort of came out on top in their comparisons?
That's another key finding. When they looked at accuracy and cost-effectiveness for generating these complete genomes, PacBio HiFi, especially when used with an assembler called MetaMDBG, consistently yielded the most accurate CMEX. And they calculated the cost at roughly $16 to complete genome, which is becoming quite feasible for larger studies.
$16 per genome, wow.
Yeah, and again, this study provides a really valuable benchmark, comparing the latest and greatest from both PacBio, the Revio system, and Oxford Manipore, their Kit 14 chemistry on this challenging longitudinal data set. It's a resource in itself.
Okay, so the tech works incredibly well. But how did having these complete genomes actually change what they could see biologically? Did it, for example, reveal microbial diversity that was previously hidden?
Dramatically so. This is another major insight. By building a custom database using the 986 new CEGs they generated, they could go back and reanalyze their sequencing rates. When they did this, the percentage of microbial reads that previously couldn't be classified dropped by an incredible 68.5%.
Wow, over two-thirds reduction in unknowns.
Exactly. It's like turning the lights on in a previously dark room. They suddenly revealed this depth of microbial diversity that was completely hidden before. This isn't just a technical win, it's a huge biological breakthrough. They can now identify 363 distinct microbial species, including 74 that are likely putative novel species, ones potentially new to science.
So we were missing a massive chunk of the picture before.
A massive chunk. We're finally getting a truer census of who's actually living in there.
Okay, let's get to the crucial link. Undernutrition. What did they find specifically relating the microbiome features to the children who weren't growing well?
Right, this is key. They looked at the children's LAZ scores. That's the length for age Z score, a standard measure of stunting. They found that the children who were experiencing linear growth, faltering, meaning their LAZ scores were decreasing over the study period, actually had significantly higher microbial richness or diversity in their gut.
Higher diversity was linked to poorer growth.
It does at first glance, doesn't it? But it might suggest a more disrupted, unstable, maybe less functionally specialized ecosystem rather than a robust, healthy one. Perhaps like weeds taking over an untended garden. But perhaps even more importantly, these children with faltering growth also showed significantly greater microbial genome instability over time.
Genome instability. What does that mean in this context?
It means that the actual DNA sequences of their gut bacteria were changing more rapidly, accumulating more mutations or rearrangements, especially after the first 5 months of the study. It's almost as if the stressful gut environment associated with poor growth, maybe the inflammation of ED, was putting pressure on the microbes, accelerating their evolution or causing more errors in replication.
Huh. Like the whole microbial community is under stress and showing signs of that stress at the genetic level.
That's a good way to think about it. These internal genetic changes within the bacteria themselves seem linked to the child's growth trajectory.
That's a really fascinating connection. Did their analysis manage to pinpoint specific microbes or even specific genes that were involved in these links to growth or other factors like breastfeeding?
Yes, they did. Thanks to having those complete genomes and the pangenome analyses, they could dig much deeper. They found that specific genetic variations within several important gut genera, think Prevotella, Bifidobacterium, Faecalibacterium, were strongly linked to things like breastfeeding status and linear growth. For example, they identified a particular gene called ARNC. This gene is known to help bacteria modify their outer surface to evade the host's immune system.
Ah, an immune evasion tactic.
Exactly. And interestingly, they found versions of this gene in Megaspheric species from children who were growing well, but also in Prevotella species associated with breastfeeding. This suggests specific genetic tools that microbes might be using to adapt and interact with the host environment, potentially influencing health outcomes.
So, if I'm getting this right, it's drilling down beyond just the species name, Prevotella, for instance, to the specific genes that different strains within that species might carry. That's a much finer level of detail.
Precisely. That's the power of this approach. For instance, they found that certain genes from Prevotella stercoria were specifically associated with linear growth outcomes, whereas different genes found in Prevotella hominis were linked more strongly to whether the child was being breastfed.
Different species within the same genus, different gene associations.
Exactly. And in another important beneficial genus, Faecalibacterium, specifically Faecalibacterium presnitzii G, they found gene associations linked to both linear growth and breastfeeding. These are the kind of species-level, even strain-level distinctions tied to specific genes that traditional methods just couldn't reliably make. It highlights these specific genetic adaptations that might be really important for influencing the child's health.
It really opens up a new way of looking at things. Now, you mentioned phages earlier, those viruses that infect bacteria. Did they find any interesting connections there?
They did look at that too, specifically at prophages, the viruses that have actually integrated their DNA into the bacterial host's genome. They found something quite interesting. Breastfed children tended to have significantly more prophage integrations per bacterial genome compared to non-breastfed children.
More viruses integrated in breastfed kids.
Yeah, and also, interestingly, females had more prophage integrations than males in this cohort. And specifically within Faecalibacterium, they saw that a higher number of phage integrations actually correlated with increasing LAZ scores in the children, meaning better growth.
So more integrated viruses in Faecalibacterium leak to better growth. That's complex.
It is complex, but it suggests a potential role for these integrated viral elements. Maybe they're modifying the bacteria in beneficial ways, contributing to gut health or resilience in some manner we don't fully understand yet. It's an area ripe for more research.
Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
So pulling this all together, what does this incredibly detailed deep dive really mean for the bigger picture? For fighting childhood undernutrition and maybe for microbiome research in general, this feels like a pretty big shift.
It really marks a paradigm shift, I think. The ability to consistently obtain complete microbial genomes at scale directly from complex samples, it just opens up entirely new research questions in microbial ecology and evolution. We're moving beyond just cataloging which microbes are present, which was kind of phase one of microbiome research.
Right, census taking.
Exactly. Now we can really start to understand their full genetic potential, what they are capable of doing, and crucially, how they are adapting and changing over time in direct response to the host's health status or environment. We're literally watching microbial evolution and adaptation happening within the gut and linking it to health. That's incredibly powerful.
That's amazing. So does this bring us closer to the idea of truly personalized interventions, moving beyond just recommending yogurt, perhaps?
Exactly. That's one of the most exciting implications. By identifying these specific genes or even specific strains of bacteria that are associated with, say, growth faltering, rather than just broad changes in species abundance, it really opens the door to developing much more targeted, precise interventions.
Like what, specifically?
Well, you could imagine designing next-generation therapeutic foods or probiotics. These wouldn't just contain generally beneficial species, but strains specifically selected because they carry particular health-promoting genes identified through this kind of research. Or maybe interventions designed to inhibit strains carrying detrimental genes.
Tailored microbial therapies based on genetics.
Precisely. It could potentially revolutionize how we approach treatment for undernutrition and maybe other microbiome-related conditions, making interventions much more effective and personalized.
And this level of detail, this approach,
yeah,
it sounds like it could be incredibly useful well beyond just nutrition research, right?
Oh, absolutely. The methods and insights here have transformative potential across many areas of global health. Think about rapid diagnostics for infectious diseases. Being able to get complete genomes quickly could help track outbreaks of things like tuberculosis or foodborne illnesses, identifying the exact strain involved.
Real-time pandemic surveillance, maybe.
Yes, or monitoring the spread of antibiotic resistance genes. Imagine having field-based sequencing units, perhaps using portable tech like Nanopore, that could provide strain-resolved metagenomic information almost immediately. You could pair that with machine learning tools right there in the clinic or field to guide treatment decisions or public health responses in real time. It connects basic science to immediate, actionable insights.
That's a compelling vision. Now, with any groundbreaking work like this, there are usually some caveats or next steps, right? What are the limitations here, and where does the research need to go next?
That's important to discuss. This study definitely establishes a new standard, a new benchmark. But like all pioneering research, it has limitations that really point the way for future work. For example, while they expanded the cohort to 47 participants, which is significant for this type of deep sequencing, we ultimately need much larger cohorts, ideally thousands of individuals.
Thousands? Why so many?
To really account for the vast amount of variation we see in the human microbiome between individuals across different geographic locations, different diets, different genetics, we need scale to find robust, generalizable patterns. Also, while they found this intriguing correlation between microbial genome instability and growth faltering, the exact cause and effect mechanisms aren't nailed down yet.
Right. Correlation isn't causation.
Exactly. So future work needs experimental validation. Maybe studies using notobiotic animal models or directed evolution experiments in the lab, or perhaps complex mesocosm studies that simulate the gut environment to really tease apart how instability relates to function and host health.
And I guess the technology itself won't stand still either.
Not a chance. It's incredible how fast things move. This data was generated less than a year before publication, and already both Oxford Nanopore and PacBio have announced further improvements to their sequencers, their chemistries, their base calling algorithms.
This is improving.
Always. So future studies will undoubtedly leverage these even more advanced capabilities, potentially getting even more complete genomes, maybe even faster or cheaper. It's a really exciting time. But we also have to acknowledge a major ongoing challenge. Translating all these newly discovered genes and genetic variations into actual biological functions. What do they do? Functional annotation remains a bottleneck, and that's a big area for future research focus. But importantly, this team has made their data and methods an open access resource for the entire scientific community. That's huge because it will undoubtedly accelerate the development of new long-read analysis tools and really spur innovation worldwide. So if we boil it down, this deep dive really shows us that achieving complete microbial genomes using long-read sequencing unlocks a genuinely new era in microbiome research. It lets us see not just which microbes are there, but their entire genetic toolkit, their repertoire, and how that actively shifts and adapts in response to something as critical as a child's health and growth. And by linking this incredibly high-resolution genetic information directly to real-world health trajectories, like linear growth in these children, we gain unprecedented insights into the complex, dynamic nature of pediatric undernutrition.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What does this truly mean for the future of personalizing health interventions? Moving beyond just broad dietary advice to maybe targeting specific microbial genes or pathways, not just for tackling undernutrition and growth, but potentially for a whole spectrum of conditions influenced by our gut microbes. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.